This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. If you observe a room full of 3- and 4-year-olds in a high-quality early childhood setting, you would probably see small groups of children playing. What's the big deal? Well, children learn through play. That's just a different way of saying that adults learn best when they do something, not just read about it or hear about it. The goal of the preschool promise, adopted by Cincinnati voters in November 2016, was to find a way to get more 3- and 4-year-olds, especially those from low-income families, into well-designed, high-quality settings. Second, it was to provide incentives for community-based child care programs to invest in the training of their staffs and the structure of their programs to raise the quality of early childhood learning for a broad cross-section of children. To discuss the status of the Preschool Promise as it begins its second full year of operation, we are joined by Preschool Promise Executive Director Shiloh Turner. While in Class 36 of Leadership Cincinnati, Ms. Turner was a member of the project team that worked on creating the initial proposal for the Preschool Promise. The president of the Cincinnati Board of Education, Carolyn Jones, and from the University of Cincinnati Arlett Center, we have Leslie Jenna Kowalski, and I've got it out once, fairly close, and early childhood teacher education specialist from Arlett Center as well, on the UC campus, Jennifer Horwitz. If you want to join our conversation, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@WVXU. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for being here today. This is really early childhood issues are something that are close to my heart, perhaps because I'm a grandfather and of a 5-year-old, but this is really an important topic. And, you know, last year, the U.S. birth rate fell to the lowest point in 30 years. And when a survey was done recently of why parents, particularly mothers, were not interested in having children or more children, the number one answer 64% gave was the cost of early childhood education. It's an amazing statistic, especially those who don't have real young children or maybe aren't grandparents of young children and therefore may not know about the cost of child care. What's the cost of a good child care program if there's no subsidies, if there's no extra funds coming in from any place? And I don't know who wants to take that on, but.
So it's a tricky question. And at the Arlett Center, we're trying to be really mindful of charging enough to remain sustainable and to exist, but also to be really respectful of the circumstances that families are in. It's tremendously expensive. And so we have different offerings, but for our full day programming, which is observes a school year, so summer's off, around $11,000. $10,000 to $12,000.
So we're talking for over a 9-month period about $11,000.
Yes, full day care.
Okay. And I would say that what I'm used to in a 5-star program where my granddaughter has been, it's about $1,000 a month, mm-hmm. $12,000, mm-hmm. which if you compare that to tuition at UC for the year, mm-hmm. that's $11,000, or at Ohio State it's $12,000, or at Miami it's $14,000. This is a big investment for parents. So, Shiloh, what is the Preschool Promise able to do for people who are boxed out of those, and not just child care as such, but quality early learning situations?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having us, by the way, Dan. I really appreciate it. I know that this is an area of passion for you. You know it's an area of passion for me. I will start by saying quality early childhood education has been a really important issue and initiative in our community for well over 15 years. We know organizations like the United Way, the Strive Partnership, obviously the district, has made a real significant investment because we know what an important investment that is for the future of not only our children, but the families and ultimately the community at large. So it's a critically important issue. What the Cincinnati Preschool Promise can provide is what I think of as really two sides of the same coin. One, we provide families with tuition assistance support to attend quality rated centers. And by quality rated, we define that as 3, 4, or 5-star rated in the state's step up to quality standards.
And these are statewide standards for people, again, who don't have children in this area. They may not be familiar with it, but anybody in this area knows very well about the standards.
That's right. So the first investment support, if you will, is from the Preschool Promise is to provide tuition assistance so that families can afford that preschool tuition. We are what we call last dollar in, so we maximize all of the other funding sources that may be eligible and available to other families. And then the other component and a significant investment that we are making is for those centers that are not yet rated at a 3, 4, or 5-star, but would like to become so, we provide what we call quality improvement supports. So that could look like anything from coaching to the help the center step up to quality, to curriculum, acquiring curriculum, developing curriculum, certifications of teachers, teacher ratios, any other tangibles that the center really needs to in order for them to become a 3, 4, or 5-star program.
Okay. And I'd like to get into more detail on that as we go on. But Carolyn, for the Cincinnati Public Schools specifically, this has been in operation now in terms of children coming in for about a year.
Yes.
What's it meant for the Cincinnati Public Schools?
Well, first of all, and thank you also for having us here. I'd like to say, you know, conceptually, this program started many years ago, and Shiloh's quite familiar with that. She was involved with it at that time. And moving into this joint venture with them, one of the things that we've always said in terms of our messaging is that it's important for children age 3 and 4 to be prepared and ready for kindergarten coming in. So this joint venture allows us to really expand around our resources so that we are better able to provide opportunities for those 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds to come into school early enough so that by the time they're in kindergarten, they're ready.
And there actually are, I guess it's test is the right term, the crawl scores.
Yes.
That measure a child's preparedness to enter a kindergarten classroom, right?
Right, that's correct.
So one of the goals here that could be measurable, and we'll get over to Leslie in a moment here, is can we raise those scores and get more children at a point of preparation
for kindergarten? That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And we're hoping that as we move farther into the project, we're in year 2 now with this, that we'll be able through all of the development and our evaluation processes and what have you to do a better job of assessing and determining even at that point, you know, 3 and 4 years old, you know, where they are in their progress.
And I would also like to underscore that the academic performance is absolutely critical, but it's not the only measure of kindergarten readiness. The social and emotional supports and having children be able to interact favorably with their classmates, with their teachers. I think the earlier that you have exposure to that from a preschool setting, the more likely you are to arrive ready for kindergarten in a more what I would call a more formalized academic setting.
Okay. And I think that's a really good point. If I can just jump in, you know, some of the things that we're talking about at UC and at the Arlett Center is how do we push this conversation about what it means to be kindergarten ready? Because at Arlett Center, we really view children as being capable and competent when they come to us. So they're born learners. So kindergarten readiness is helpful in terms of assessing and kind of seeing where each individual child is coming in from not knowing them at all. But we want to push that discussion a little bit further about these are unique children that are already learning and so full. So what do the schools need to do? What do preschools need to provide? That flips that a little bit. So how are we ready for the children? You know, and so we can kind of think of them as already being ready in so many ways, but we want to equip them to be the most successful that they can be when they enter into a more formalized program.
You know, when you said that, I started out as a teacher the first 6 years of my career, and therefore having been a teacher, my attitude is with schools, just don't screw my kids up. I mean, really. I mean, there are a lot of capabilities there. It's just, I know a lot of teachers I'd like to keep them away from. But anyway, Jennifer, when you walk into a classroom, Arlet is where you work, but when you walk into an early childhood classroom, what is it that sort of catches your eye? What is it that for you it says, ooh, something really good's happening here, or I'm worried about this?
So physically walking into a space is the aesthetics of the environment. What color palette has the teacher chosen? Are we operating in red, yellow, blue, vibrant primary colors, or are we in a more home-like, natural, soothing palette? There's no prescriptive rule that says children operate in primary colors only, and that can have a severe impact on the sensory input that a child's receiving. So, you know, the color scheme, is it a home-like environment, soft things, pillows, child-sized furniture, materials completely accessible to children, a space that says and communicates to children that this is your space. My classroom is not even my space. It's the space for the children. When I design it, which I will be doing later this week, we'll go back into the classroom, homey but a little sparse at the beginning because I don't know my children yet. And I don't know what they're going to need. So the walls have some beautiful works, but a lot of open space for them to make it their own. A lot of natural materials, a lot of open-ended materials so that they can explore their interests. Like Leslie said, they're coming in already very capable, very confident. My room has 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds all mixed together. So I'm operating kind of widely within the preschool parameters. And so I take what I learned from them on a home visit, you know, make my best guess for initial material offerings, and then go from there. So looking at that, also the way that the teacher interacts with the children. So obviously down on their level, no one needs to be towering over the children. Calm, soothing tones, never really needing to raise your voice. And that's not because the children aren't engaging in some concerning behaviors, but because a teacher or an adult who's in the care of the children is kind of the bellwether for that child. And if a child is naturally feeling out of control and the adult in charge of them starts to exhibit symptoms of being out of control, that's terrifying for a child. So the emotional climate, the physical climate, and the way that the children are interacting with each other as well.
Carolyn, what has this first year meant for Cincinnati Public Schools in terms of creating some new facilities and being ready for the continuing growth of the preschool promise? I mean, one of the things that was just being talked about is what classroom space ought to look like. Jennifer was talking about it. But as you've been setting that up, what has this meant for the Cincinnati Public Schools, even hiring staff?
Yes. Well, for Cincinnati Public Schools, what this joint venture has allowed us to do was to expand even within the district setting. The community-based programs, I mean, Shiloh may have the numbers on the number of children who have been enrolled. And I believe for the district, it's been like 700 or so. And for the community-based programs through Shiloh's preschool promise settings, it's more like 600.
Right.
So, but for us, it has allowed
700 new and 600 new. Is that what we're talking about?
So in the first year of the program, we've served over 1,300 kids total, some of which were served through CPS preschool classrooms. And in fact, 41 CPS classrooms participated. And an additional 41 community provider classrooms participated in tuition assistance. So for year one, to serve over 1,300 children, it's a pretty big lift, and we were very proud to get there. That said, we anticipate even expanding that service additionally in years two and beyond.
Okay.
Yes. So, for example, we have several school buildings that had space, and with the growth and enrollment in Preschool Promise, we are able to you know, use those buildings and fill the spaces there. So, yes. And to give you an example, Rising Star Academy is one of the schools. This is the old Vine Street School.
Right.
That's
which had been closed.
It had been closed for quite some time. And so now that school is dedicated, along with one of our other Rising Star Academies, which is on the west side. So those buildings are especially for the preschool Promise enrollment.
And what's the size? What size do you sort of imagine is the right size number of children in a classroom in this, you know, 3-4 year old age group?
I've had as few as 12 back a long time ago. Last year I had 18. 16 is nice. 18 felt a little much, especially with the staffing that we have. Our ratios are 1 teacher to 10 children. Mm-hmm. There's me and an assistant. So, you know, if I need to go to the bathroom, we need to strategize. So 16 is nice.
And Shiloh, on the community-based programs, you were saying growth there as well.
Absolutely.
But not just growth, but what are you doing to help raise up the quality, the stars, moving up in the star system?
Sure. So we have over 60 community providers that are involved in our quality improvement program, with 22 programs already receiving quality improvement coaching, classroom supplies, and other necessities to step up their quality. And in year one, we've had 3 providers that have already flipped, if you will, to become a high-quality community provider center, including 2 that received 5 stars. So really exciting, and that's just the beginning. As you might imagine, that is the component of the program that took the most ramping up, because we had to identify who are those providers out there in the community that would like to have a step up to quality process going on, and where can we find them, and how can we provide supports to
them?
There's
real practical implications for centers that do step up, in the sense that they're then eligible to take children who are going to get the subsidies, right?
That's right. And not just with Preschool Promise, but potentially other state and federal funds as well.
So there's some real practicality here. And incentive. I think we call that incentive rather
right.
than, yes, a hammer. So anyway, I am also, though, there's the centers, the community centers, and then there's the school setting. And it sounds like Arlet's now on a school schedule. Is that true? I thought it was year-round, but you're on a school schedule.
You know, it depends year by year.
Okay. And that really poses some real problems, especially for working parents, especially mm-hmm. for single parents who are working, that I did a little count on the school calendar. Besides the summer break, which is 11 to 12 weeks, depending on how you count it, there's another month of breaks in there, not even counting the days that could be sort of generalized as national holidays and Martin Luther King Day, which parents may or may not be off of. But that's a lot of days to start juggling. And in community centers, at least the ones I'm familiar with, those are probably 362 days a year type of situations where you've got predictability. So if we're moving more kids into school schedules earlier, that doesn't necessarily recognize all the parent needs. And what do you say about that? What do you do about that?
So at the Arlet Center, like I was saying, our programming flexes from year to year specifically for that reason. And honestly, we would prefer just to offer year-round programming, but we can't always afford it. We have to have the enrollment, and we are a blended program. So we accept children who are funded via tuition, but also Head Start. And that's not a funding source that we can access during the summer. So for the past 2 years, we've offered what we call a summer camp, which is essentially the same type of programming, Monday through Friday, all day, to try and support some of these families. But it's tricky to reach the families that are lower income, because the funding has to get really creative. And, we charge $10,000 to $12,000 a year, per child, but I have a master's degree with 10 years of teaching experience, and I'm making $33,000 a year, which if I took that to a public school, I would be at least doubling, if not more, my salary. And so it's just crunching all these numbers
are
is incredibly difficult.
Early childhood teachers that you're hiring in the Cincinnati Public Schools on the Cincinnati Public School pay scale, therefore making a lot more?
Well, I would say that they probably are making a little bit more in the school mm-hmm. setting. I can't give you the exact figure, but I think
but they
she's
would be
accurate.
On they would be on
yes.
your regular pay
they
scale.
They would be on our regular
That's
pay
correct.
Scale.
They're making more.
Yes. And yeah. and I just want to add to that because I think it is a critical issue that you raise about, you know, what happens when school is out for holidays and summers. And I know that the district is very much aware that that's a reality and a not so good reality for families who need to work. And it's certainly on our radar in terms of thinking about future. So it's just a realistic problem, you know, and hopefully one day it'll be such that, you know, preschool can be made available as needed. So,
yeah. I mean, I think, too, you're really speaking to the fact that this is a very complex issue. Mm-hmm. And it is knowing where to target because you look at pay and
right.
teachers are not getting paid enough, but we're not pulling in high quality enough teachers. Well, with that pay, it's hard to do and it's hard mm-hmm. to cover those gaps of holidays
exactly.
or offer extended care. So this is a very complex issue that is really rooted socially. And so beyond just having, you know, children that need quality care, it's very much embedded in a lot of other issues. And that's what I think is important. It's exciting that we're starting to have some of these conversations.
Yes.
And
yes.
without having the conversations, people aren't going to even
exactly.
be aware of it.
Exactly.
So,
right.
and how all of this interacts. Shiloh, what's sort of the goal this year? How would you, as you go into this school year, how do you think about the goals for Preschool Promise?
Well, I think that we certainly would like to grow the tuition assistance support that we have provided from year one. And so I think CPS has intentions of expanding classrooms.
Yes.
We also have, on the community provider side of the coin, intend to engage with additional community providers. And we would really like to stretch those dollars to reach the most children and families as we possibly can, and also to, again, ramp up our quality improvement investments, because ultimately what we're really looking for is if every 3- and 4-year-old in our region or in Cincinnati Public Schools footprint is seeking out quality preschool, we need to develop more quality seats.
Yeah. That we did have a caller who dropped off, but I want to relay this call, and we're starting to run out of time here. So, but Allison asked, it's safe to say that preschool is now covering what used to be covered in kindergarten. I think this is sort of seeing this as a curriculum learnings academic model, but okay, I'm just going to put that aside for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got me excited.
I know.
Well,
I'll
come
say
back
about
to
that.
And has been accelerated over the years. Hey, when I went to school, when I went to kindergarten 68 years ago, I didn't know how to read. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of that stuff. So what is really going on here?
So first of all, reading. If you really look at the research and the theory, it's not developmentally appropriate or necessary to read mm-hmm. until more like third grade. So we are pushing children to do more. And I want to just throw it out there that high-quality early learning does not mean learning more earlier. It is about equipping them with attitudes and skills that make them successful later in life. And that is part of what we mean learning through okay. play. They need the experience. They need the opportunity. And our job is to protect that.
Okay.
And I would also say with that, you know, there's an adage that until third grade, you're learning to read. And after
yes.
third grade, you're reading to learn.
Exactly.
So that's really
okay.
fun.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.